Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Now, I know I'm going to lose some golf points for saying this, but I'm not particularly good at carving jack-o'-lanterns.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, October 26th. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me, as always, we got Tass Mellis.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Tassie. Back from camping from the week, we got the bearded one, Trey Kirby.
Ayo!
Ayo! We've got the international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends!
Last but not least, making the magic happen, JD.
Hello!
There he is. Here we are, all five of us, back together, at least virtually. Trey, how was camping? Were there bass in those lakes that you were at?
The camping was great. The nature was great. Vacation was great. The family was great. The fishing was tough, Skeets. You know, all the local rednecks report that there's bass in that lake, but it is tough to catch them. The guy in the stump blaster truck with the Alabama flags told me, my daddy's been out here for 3 days. He ain't caught shit.
No.
And it was the same for me. I had a big topwater explosion on the Whopper Plopper. But that's it. That's one of the worries when you're fishing topwater, Skeets. You're going to miss more fish than you hit. Just short-striked me. But hey, it's all about the nature out there. Wow. It's about the journey. It's not all about the lips sometimes. That's what you say when you're a fisherman and you don't catch anything. It's all something else's fault. You know, the weather was wrong, or maybe the location was wrong. It was a little too overcast. Maybe my colors were off. I'm not used to the clear water. Whatever it was, there were bass in there. I didn't get them.
Are you telling me no lips were ripped?
Zero lips, my friend. Zero lips. A giant lake. What are you going to do? We saw some bald eagles. It was awesome. We saw a whole bunch of carp jumping. Couldn't get them. But we were doing our best out there, and we honestly just had an incredible time. I've been scouting other lakes in the region. You know, we were about 4 hours away in Tennessee, Center Hill Lake, no luck, but we're driving back. I see Chickamauga Lake, where the guys from Tactical Bassin just relocated. We're talking Matt Allen and Tim Little are there ripping lips themselves. I got to get out with those guys. They know what they're doing.
This guy is so into fishing, it's unbelievable. Well, okay, I'm sad to hear you didn't rip any lips, but that's okay. It looked from your photos or the videos I saw, the camping itself or the nature looked pretty incredible. So I'm glad you had a great week off. This week's No Dunk schedule, just before we get into it here, this Wednesday, we're bringing back Squad. We got a good one. Halloween, right around the corner. Can you believe it? Yeah, me neither. But we're doing a special Squad Halloween episode. We're talking candy, we're talking songs, movies, and more in our very fun draft episode. So that's coming up on Wednesday. Then later in the week, Lee, I think you're popping packs with somebody special. Am I wrong? You got an internet legend.
An internet legend, yes. The biggest San Antonio Spurs fan in the world, Shea Serrano, Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern. So look forward to that one. Yeah, it should be exciting stuff.
Okay, so we'll flip that into a podcast, I'm sure. Maybe on Friday we'll get that up. He was fantastic on the Who Wants Some Trivia with me, so I can only imagine he's going to be great popping packs.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And look, I don't want to lock in this other one, but we might have another special guest we're working on for another podcast later in the week. If we can land it, it will be great.
Oh,
that's your hint. That's your hint.
What are you cooking up there for us?
Oh, let me put it at 350. Leave it for 45 minutes. So we'll see. We'll see. It's not locked in yet, but we got squad for sure. We got a pop in packs, maybe this other special one. But today, let's get right into the up down report.
Prepare your tubies. It's the up down report.
Yeah, the up-down report. We got a lot to talk about here suddenly, once again. And this one, ooh, JD, you may want to just walk away from this little news here. I'd love to hear your take later on. But on Friday, Shams and other reporters, they said that the league's board of governors is pursuing a December 22nd start for next season. Yes, pre-Christmas. Like 10 weeks from now. Among other changes being discussed right now are a 72-game regular season, not waiting for fans to be permitted into the arenas, as well as tournaments and play-in scenarios. It's sort of all being discussed. The Players Association will have to agree on this. They're not going to have a lot of time. This is going to have to come together pretty quickly here. But, Tass, get us started. Up or down on an idea of a 72-game season starting December 22nd, 2020. What do you think?
I'm going up on it. I think it's what's best for the league. Okay. And I think we want what's best for the league. Because originally the idea to push it later into January, February, or March was getting fans into the stands. And it's becoming very clear in the U.S. a couple of months isn't going to change that. I don't think the NBA ethically can decide that. And they're just deciding to be proactive here. They just can't wait and wait and wait to see if that turns around. It's not going to turn around in the U.S. anytime soon. So earlier means a lot of good things. They own Christmas Day, which would be, you know, the second, third day of the schedule, whatever it is. They capitalize by going a day before, too, because, you know, everybody's tuning in for opening night. Let's not do just Christmas Day is opening night. Let's go before, get both those, double up. So that's smart. And you match the old NBA calendar. They're going to basically rush the end of the regular season to be in April. So all those same days that we used to know, December, January, February, March, April, all the games played in there, and then they end the finals in June. Probably no All-Star game, because again, that's not an ethically good idea to bring guys, fly them in, fly them out. You avoid playing in the summer months, July and August. We see it doesn't work for the NBA. Ratings go poof, and you get closer to a regular 21-22 than the following season if you can end in June, like the plan is. And they're cutting 10 games. I think we should all be pumped about that. I know everybody in the media is a little womp womp. We don't get our offseason. But there's bigger things to worry about. And you cut 10 games, which we've all been asking for. So I think it works out. They've learned from other sports and how to control the virus in a format that's a non-bubble format. I'm going thumbs up. I know people are worried. I don't get my couple months off, but that's the way she rolls. I think it is best for the league to try and match up the old skid.
Yeah, I thought that at first, I'll be honest. I was like, oh, this sucks. Like, we've done 350 shows. We're going to like roll right into another season here. At first, I did think that, and I did the womp womp. But then I was like, hold on. I ain't going anywhere anyway. And I think I'd rather have my summers off. So let's get back on track as much as possible. Get this season going. I'm with you, Tass. They've definitely are turning to, you know, the experts, to science, and saying, no, you're not going to be having fans in your arenas, you know, maybe in March probably. So why don't you just get started earlier? Yeah, and then we get back to more of a normal schedule, hopefully, whatever normal means in this world. And then, yeah, we get the summers off again. So I've come around on this a little bit, but what do you think, Lee? You a thumbs up or thumbs down on this proposal here?
Oh, definitely thumbs up. I mean, the better we get basketball back, the sooner we get it back, the better for everyone. I mean, I know that it's not the traditional break that teams have, but I mean, how long do these professional athletes really need to take off anyway? I mean, the season ended for two teams only a couple of weeks ago, so they've got 2 months to get ready. I know there's, you know, you need to prepare, you need to integrate everyone, there's going to be free agency and draft and all that, but really, you're playing basketball, so I think everyone should be able to get themselves ready to go by mid to late December there. And I think I'm excited for it because otherwise we were facing the prospect of waiting another 3 months after that to get basketball started. And no one wants to wait that long, really. So, and really, ultimately, what it comes down to is what you guys are kind of saying there. The owners and the league clearly wanted to get fans back in the stadium. That's not happening. So then it's like, well, let's start getting paid whatever we can get paid,
right,
get these games on TV as quickly as possible. And I think December makes sense. And I think, you know, yeah, Christmas Day is always a big day on the NBA calendar. Get a couple of games going first, have a big Christmas Day, and then get into the season. So, you know, I still think the NBA, I would trim it a few games more. I would take a few games off and make it a little bit so then you don't have to squeeze quite so many games in. I think there's room for experiment there. But 72 is probably going to be what they're going to agree on based on the reporting. I mean, these things tend to be fairly accurate, so there might be a little bit of trimming around the edges there. But I would have tightened it up a little bit more and had a few less games so that then you aren't, you know, again, the less traveling, the fewer interactions, I think, reduce the risk even more. But we'll see what the final equation is here from the NBA. But overall, a thumbs up. Very excited. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, again, the Players Association do have to agree to this. So maybe this is just sort of some sort of negotiating right now. But I think it's going to happen because, you know, Shams wrote, the league office told the Board of Governors that the projected value for teams and players with a December 22nd start versus a later start, you know, in the 2021 year, is a $500 million difference. Money talks usually, Trey, so I actually think this might happen now here. What's your take, up or down?
Yeah, there's the equation for you, Skeets. If you start the season earlier in December, you get plus $500 million. So that seems like it's going to be a thumbs up from the league. Shams also mentioned in his reporting it's been important for teams and players to get back on a normal schedule, which allows the players to also receive their summers. Everybody wants to have something less to do in the summers. Everybody wants to. Some people want to go out and rip lips. Some people want to get better at basketball. The fact of the matter is it doesn't seem like we're going to be able to be in stands even as early as March, so you might as well get that money. And we have to give the league the benefit of the doubt with regards to safety. The bubble worked. We learned a lot from the bubble. From a safety standpoint, also from a game standpoint, also from a presentation standpoint. So now if they're able to settle on a date in late December, you still got a couple of months to figure out how you're going to make the games look good, because they looked good down in Orlando, but things are going to be different when you're playing in a real stadium that's been there for 50 years and now it's completely empty. But if you got 2 months, you can figure out ways to retrofit things with giant video boards or whatever the teams are going to decide to do to make it look like basketball again. So it just makes sense from a dollars and cents standpoint and from a safety standpoint, since it doesn't feel like 3 months is going to make that big of a difference in the grand scheme of things. So yeah, we're going to be seeing basketball again soon. It's pretty crazy. I was driving to Tennessee, listening to some classic No Dunks podcasts, and I heard Skeet say, why are we even calling this the 2021 season? Not going to be starting in 2020. Just call it 2021 season. It's easy for everybody. Next thing you know, we're starting in December.
Crazy. Oh my God. I know. It's going to be like 8 or 9 days. I forget how many days are in December. We're going to have it, the 2020-21 season. It will stay true to that. We talked about safety, though. Tess, I think you slipped it in there. The league maybe has looked at some of these other sports, NFL, MLB, and have learned a thing about, hey, you don't have, well, they're not doing the bubble. Maybe they shouldn't be, but they can learn some things because it's not going all that well. Correct me if I'm wrong, in some of these other leagues, and NFL specifically have had, you know, outbreaks and games postponed and maybe missed and stuff like that. And that is a sport that they're only playing once a week. So it's easier to make those sort of up if you have to and stuff. Like, are you, I mean, I guess we're giving the benefit of the doubt to the league because they did such a good job with the bubble, but this is a different beast, right? This idea of like, we're playing in all these arenas and yeah, we might change the schedule to make it more like you go to New York and you play the Knicks and then you play the Nets and then, okay, you don't have to come back, but still, you're putting a lot of faith in all of these players and all the staffs to not screw up, to not go out to the club, to not go somewhere they shouldn't. I mean, they're just not sealed in a bubble. It's not going to be foolproof, right? I think that's got to be a bit of a concern here.
Yeah, when you put it up against what they just did in the bubble, sure. But they also have those other leagues to go off of, and it sure seems like they're not going to play the other conference at all. So your Eastern Conference teams, it sure looks like, aren't going to play the Western Conference teams because it makes it easier to reschedule if you do have a little bit of a boo-boo and something happens where you have to cancel a game. It's easier to go get a quick game in if you're the Brooklyn Nets, probably in Philadelphia or somewhere close rather than have to fly over LA later on in the schedule. If you can just shove it in on a March day, it makes it better. It looks it or makes it easier, I should say. It looks like that's going to happen. They're learning. And yeah, it's not as easy as a bubble. Maybe there'll be a bubble for the finals, perhaps something like that. Or maybe we'll even have fans later on in the season. I think that's not something they are, you know, canceling right now. But there's a reason that it's also 72 games because that satisfies all the TV providers, because that gets to a number where that's the same thing going into the bubble, why they got all those seeding games. It's because they needed teams to get to the 72 game mark approximately to make all that money. So it's a lot. There's a lot of factors. And yeah, there could definitely be a positive test here or there, but it sure looks like the Lakers aren't going to be playing the New York Knicks this season, and the reason is because it makes it easier to shove it in there if somebody does have contracts the virus and that game has to be canceled, like there has been in baseball, in the NFL. That's just the way it is right now.
Yeah, that's fascinating, though. You don't think, like, the Eastern Conference teams will be playing the Western Conference teams at all?
According to John Hollinger's reporting, it's not going to
happen. Versus your own conference, right?
Yeah, it looks like you're playing. If you're in your own division, you're playing each team 8 times, it sure looks like, and then the rest of the conference 4 times. So a lot of that. And it reduces the travel, right? So the New York Knicks go play the Sixers if they're on the road. You have a little 2-game series. Come over, have a little 2-game series. There's going to be a lot of that.
But you look at teams like the Grizzlies, who are basically an Eastern Conference location, but they'll be playing in the Western Conference, so they'll be traveling, you know. And then look at Oklahoma City as well. Like, they're close. Like, there's so many teams in that sort of central line that just happen to be in the Western Conference. So, you know, the traveling one, like, teams are still going to have to travel long distances to play in their own conferences, certainly from the Western Conference anyway. So they're going to be on the road for long periods of time. So it's a bit weird. I mean, I know this is probably not the time to talk about it, but I've said, like, just scrap conferences and divisions. Just play each other. Like, I sort of said it on Twitter the other day, play everyone once home and once away, 58 games. I think that's the best way to balance a schedule. And then you get the top 16 teams based on exactly how many you've all played the same schedule. Now, I know that doesn't fit the 72 game requirement for TV rights.
Right.
But I think that's the best way to balance the schedule out and get a fair indication of who deserves to be in the playoffs. But I know that's not going to happen because that's cutting back an enormous amount of games, which is revenue, and that's not what the owners or the players want. So it won't happen, but in theory, I think that would be the best way to approach it.
Yeah, sure. This is going to be wild. I mean, the draft is obviously still scheduled for November 18th. We don't still know when free agency is. We, you know, Hollinger is guessing it's basically a week after, you know, because some people thought it'd be early December. That feels like it's got to be pushed up a little bit. Then are there training camps? Are there, I mean, like, when are
summer league?
Yeah, like, when, yeah, we'll see, right.
Fall ball
is done. But, like, it's going to just happen so quickly here, and you wonder what type of effect that could have on teams and their ability, or maybe not, to build rosters, right? To switch things up by trades or stuff like that. Like, I just wonder if that has any sort of trickle-down effect on, like, whoa, there's a little sort of too much going on here. Well, let's just stand pat. This is going to be a weird season as it is again, so let's just not do anything drastic. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be the opposite. Maybe it'll be just, like, craziness happening. But one thing I said there in the intro, play-in scenario still in play, right? We saw that, of course, in the bubble. You know, if you're a certain distance behind the 8 seed, well, then you trigger this sort of the Mega Bowl, as we called it. And if you were the 9 seed, you had to beat them twice and stuff like that, as we saw. Trey, you like that idea of them continuing to keep that, or would you change it at all? What's your take on that whole thing?
Yeah, I like it. The play-in tournament was super fun, and watching the Blazers claw their way back, watching the Grizzlies collapse a little bit, it was fun, and I guess probably not if you're a Grizzlies fan, but it was exciting for the other 29 fan bases to be watching. So yeah, it makes sense to run it back sort of with a play-in tournament. I don't know if you want to keep it. I think it was 4 games out of the 8th seed was the cutoff for this, but that was just kind of a circumstantial thing with where the teams were prior to the shutdown and everything. So maybe you change it to you got to be within 1 game of the 8th seed to get into the Mega Bowl tournament. There's got to be a little bit of tinkering with the exact specifications of it, but it was very exciting. And, you know, for a game that ultimately meant nothing, you know, the Blazers ended up getting smoked by the Lakers in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That game, though, was awesome. That was it was totally worth it. And that kind of thing will drive ratings. And that's another way, another branded thing that you could sell and get a little bit of that revenue back as well. They're learning a lot of things from the bubble, and I think that the play-in tournament certainly was one that worked. So, yeah, bring it back.
Yeah, I'm with you. Tass, you agree? Would you expand it maybe even? Would you include the seventh seed, you know, like if your particular game's close enough to them that it is more of a tournament? Or do you like the way it was? What do you think?
People say
7 to 10, you know, the seed 7 to 10 could be playing in some sort of tournament if they're close enough again.
Mm, that's the traditional format that people wanted, right? Am I correct? 7?
I think so. I remember that was one of the first ones, I felt like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, last year, as Trey alluded to, a few months ago when they brought in the Suns, who went 8-0, it worked out well, and they brought in the Wizards. Yeah, that was just this year, this is the way things are, and we're trying to be fair. So going
but
into
it was
next
a
year,
success, though, right?
Of course, of
like,
course, yeah.
Trey talked about it. Yeah, so of why course, wouldn't you do yeah. it again? Yeah,
yeah. No, just I'm just meaning like as far as the nitty gritty. Are you going to bring in the Wizards who are 5.5 games back, or the 11th seed or 12th seed? They brought in 12 teams in the Western Conference, right? Or is it 13? Running 13.
I think it was 13 and 9 from the East.
Yeah, yeah. So they're not going to break 13 teams. That would be nuts.
Wow, was it 13? The Kings were there. You're right. The Wolves and the Warriors were the only ones.
Suns were the worst team.
Yeah, no, you're right. So Lee, what do you think? I assume your thumbs up on this idea.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think it worked so well, and the NBA experimented. They took the opportunity to do it down there, and it was successful. Now, not every single play-in game is going to be as exciting, probably, as it was that time. But I think these are the sorts of things you've got to try now and see if they do connect with fans, because I think it does also keep that race alive at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now ultimately the Blazers, you know, they won one game off the Lakers and they lost, but we were still excited to see them make that chase. And it came down literally to the last game. Remember, Phoenix were hoping that the Blazers would lose to the Nets because then the Suns would have gotten in. So it really, like, there was so much excitement in those last few games that led into it. And that's really what the NBA needs. That's one of the biggest problems the NBA has, is teams that are basically tanking when half the season is still going on. You need to keep as many teams hopeful of making the playoffs as possible, and I think the play-in tournament does that. So yes, I would probably expand it a little bit too myself. Yeah. I would
but
add.
Wouldn't
another...
it be less exciting even in this bubble scenario if the Suns were guaranteed to make it? If they were one of the 7 through 10, it wouldn't have been as exciting seeing them go undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been in there already. They wouldn't have even had to try in that last game. That's why, to me, we don't need 20 playoff teams. That's way too many. 18 is too many. 16 is too many. But at least 18 is less than 20. Personally, I would keep it to the 8 and 9. You don't need to go super deep. You're going to be asking teams from the Eastern Conference who have 30 and 31 wins to come in and try and win a couple of games in a play-in tournament. Maybe it would be exciting, but I don't know. That just seems a little bit too much of a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. My point is you want to try to keep as many teams competing for wins at the end of the season, which is a problem, you know, because and I know that the draft isn't the same as it was and in terms of your lottery odds of getting the number one pick. But there is a problem, I think, still that exists within the NBA where, you know, a lot of teams just basically mail it in, you know, early into the season when they're looking ahead to the lottery. And I think you want to try to avoid that as best you can. There's probably no perfect system. But
the flattening of the lottery odds was a good start.
It's a good start, yeah. Yeah. Right. And I think they will keep tinkering with it as well. Yeah. I think Adam Silver has shown that he wants to try to improve it. And again, he always references the soccer leagues in Europe. And one of the things they'd have is the relegation battle, which keeps all those teams battling for life right up until the last day of the season. Now, it's not quite the same in the NBA, but that's what he's trying to achieve, I think. And I think he'll keep trying to work on it.
And I remember Trey saying this at the time of the bubble, let's not forget. Maybe a big reason why it was so exciting, or all the games felt exciting, is because we told the 8 crappy teams to stay the f*** home. Don't even show up. I mean, let's not forget. Like, those teams will still be around in these weird regional bubbles, whatever the heck we're doing here. So, you know, it's going to be a little bit different. I was asked this question before we move on here, Tass. I want to throw it at you. On the Dishes and Dimes podcast last night, I hadn't thought about it. Word is, you said it, we're not probably going to have an all-star game. Like, that seems weird to do, to bring everybody from all over the country into one spot. Seems like a possible spreading event, super spreading event. So do we still name All-Stars? If there's no All-Star game, will they still do the whole, like, here's who makes the All-Star game, here's the voting and all that? What do you think?
100% yes. It matters. Those All-Star little little marks on the basketball reference page, just to have that little icon up there. Yeah, it matters. And it matters more than the actual game itself.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, yeah, I think so. I think you got to go through the
It's the accolade, hurdles. It's the recognition, and it's also sometimes in clauses in contracts. So I absolutely think they will name it, and they just, there's no point in playing the game. So
it's also content, which the NBA is obviously going to want. You want to hear us debating and every other show debating about who's an all-star, who isn't? Oh, my God. Yeah, that was my answer last night, too, Tess. I was like,
yeah, they can still create the jerseys, too.
Sure, sell them as well.
Do the whole draft, do it, and then play the game like through the E-League or something like that. Ooh. There are options they could do. I don't know. Maybe you could virtual reality into it. Who knows what it is? They'll at least name them. You got to get the patches.
Yeah, okay. So we're all on board with that. And then I guess there is some talk too, right? Maybe it was Windhorst saying there's a potential that they just give them two weeks off in the middle of this weird season, like just to... for the players to rest, which is, you know, I mean, is potentially a good thing. Like, that's the other part here. We don't know how jammed in, like, this 72-game season will really be. Like, you would assume the league is going to try to avoid what was happening, obviously, back in, you know, 2011 when it was back-to-back-to-backs and stuff like that. The league doesn't want anything to do with that anymore. But how much will players load manage, which they do already? Will that even be more? Or will they be able to make this schedule not that bad? Because like you guys are saying, there's not as much travel. There's not as much competing events in some of these arenas. There's not a Rihanna concert going on in the same arena. So it just might be easier. Who knows? Who knows? But looks like we're getting basketball back pre-Christmas, which is wild.
I almost feel bad for a team like the Lakers, who you assume will be playing on Christmas. They just spent however long in the bubble away from their families. Now they finally get back home. They have to start playing basketball right away, and they're missing Christmas. That sucks.
Yeah, that would suck. And you wonder if that's what the Players Association will push back on. Like, God, this is
We want to open presents with our families.
Well, yeah. I mean, we just went to Orlando for 3 months, for crying out loud. 4 months, whatever it was. Like, at least give us until the new year to start it back up. But, you know, then they say, well, okay.
You want to buy Christmas presents?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I know it's tough for the Lakers. I know it's tough Christmas Day, but it's worse for the Toronto Raptors, who won't be playing in Toronto, most likely. Mm. They'll be playing all 4 months in the U.S., most likely, because they won't be flying back and forth.
Yeah, obviously.
Just like the Toronto Blue Jays did. What is it? That's what's going to happen.
It's not 100% yet. I guess they're changing some testing protocols at airports and stuff like that. I mean, is it? I'm with you. I mean, it's definitely in play. They could be playing in Buffalo or Kansas City or wherever they pick. Maybe they put them in New York and it's easier there or something like that. But I guess there's still a possibility that the Canadian government, in working with them, can allow it somehow where it's still safe, where these teams fly in on their private planes anyway and just go to the arena and play and then leave. I mean, I guess it's possible. But you're right, Des. It could be playing in some weird city in America. It sounds like it's not going to be Louisville because they're saying we're not going there. But it could be somewhere else, like you said, Buffalo or something. So, yeah, we'll see. It's going to be crazy. Who does this benefit if they start early or late December, I guess? Does it benefit teams like that were just playing, like the Lakers or Heat? Or does that suck because they were just playing, so in theory they're tired? Like, some of these teams haven't played in forever, since March.
It'll be nearly 9 months in between actual NBA games. I guess it would favor the teams that have most recently played because they've had gameplay. And, you know, you can practice all you want, but nothing replicates what it's like to be out on the court. So I think the teams that, you know, not necessarily just the Lakers and the Heat that went to the finals, all those other teams that just got reps in and you know, got familiar with their players again, I would say it would benefit them.
Mm. And before we move on from this, JD, what do you think? Pre-Christmas start? Big fan, I assume. Thumbs up?
Yeah, well, at first I was like, well, this definitely tracks for 2020, you know? I mean, it's a game of stamina, you know? Like, and I think that's, as you say, that's who's going to, it's going to benefit. And, you know, we all have our ways of coping with the grueling schedule. And I've got this, so
For those listening, JD just took a nice swig of some, I believe it was Johnny Walker Black there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Johnny Walker Black.
Oh, very nice.
I went down a little too easy. At 10:35.
Yeah, it's 10:30 in the morning, bro. Woo! Wow. All right, we'll survive, JD. We'll survive.
Yeah, it's fine. You're never going to hear me complain about working. Not in this environment, no. I'm Good happy point. To work.
This isn't really working.
Yeah, you're right.
Let's be honest, for us.
Exactly right.
Feel bad for the people that actually got to work. All right, well, let's keep moving unless there's anything else to add to this, guys. No, let's go to the next one. If the Celtics look to deal Gordon Hayward this offseason, they have at least one potential trade partner, according to SNY's Ian Begley. Hayward's hometown Indiana Pacers are potentially interested in him. Now, we're, of course, waiting to see if Gordo picks up his $32.4 million player option he has with Boston. He's expected to opt in. He's a 30-year-old forward with injury concerns. You're probably not going to pass up the $34 million payday, but hey, maybe you want to sign a long-term deal. Who knows? But up or down on the Pacers trying to trade for Gordon Hayward. Trey, get us started.
From the Jazz to the Celtics to the Pacers, sounds about white. I'm up on this. Joking aside, it feels like the Pacers are a little bit in flux this, whatever we're calling this offseason. You want to say summer, it ain't the summer, but they're certainly in flux. You know, they hired one Nate out, one Nate in. Skeets, pronounce this name for me, Bjorkgren?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That
I mean,
simple?
That's how I'm saying it, yep.
Yeah, I heard you say it on 1.5 speed, so I wasn't sure if I totally nailed it, but they got a new Nate in town. Victor Oladipo allegedly wants out. He might be looking for a trade. They might actually trade him, so certainly there is some allure bringing home a hometown guy in Gordon Hayward who mm-hmm. played basketball there during his high school career, during his college career. And, you know, now he could obviously continue his pro career there as well. And I think he actually fits a little bit as a piece. As if you assume that that Victor Oladipo is no longer a Pacer, along with Malcolm Brogdon, Domantas Sabonis, those are all guys who can kind of play with the ball, play without the ball, make good decisions, make plays, and score on their own. He would have a bigger role, I think, on the Pacers than he would on the Celtics, but mm-hmm. still lesser than he did on Utah, which is probably exactly where Gordon Hayward needs to be right now. He's not necessarily a number one or number two guy, but he can definitely help as a secondary, tertiary creator in that sort of realm. But yeah, I mean, it seems a little bit like a marketing ploy. It definitely feels like anytime Gordon Hayward is going to be available, the Pacers are going to be rumored to be in the mix for him. But I think it could work out if they're ready to move on from Miles Turner. You know, the Celtics could be interested in a big guy like Miles yeah. Turner. They've got to do a lot more contract matching. Maybe you need to get a third team involved. TJ Warren could go somewhere else because you probably don't need him if Gordon Hayward's around. But it sounds funny because it's Gordon Hayward and Indiana and the Pacers. But it makes a little bit of sense, I think.
Okay, a little bit of sense. Tass, what do you think?
Totally. It looks like two teams that have been rumored forever to be wanting a couple of certain things could have a match right here, especially with Victor Oladipo rumored to be out of there. So if you trade machine it up, Victor Oladipo and Miles Turner could be traded for Gordon Hayward and Daniel Tice. Makes sense. Indy could move on from Oladipo anyway. If you could get Gordon Hayward for him, a guy, yep, they have been rumored for a long time to be wanting. So that kind of makes sense. Miles Turner as a Boston Celtic as their center definitely makes sense. So I know it's a bit of a reach, but it's one of those things that we've been talking about forever. Boston wanting a big, Gordon Hayward going to Indiana. It almost seems too fitting, but it could happen. It could happen here.
What do you think, Lee?
Yeah, Gordon Hayward's a very good player, but the injury concerns do sort of limit what you think he can, his best can be, I think, for me. In the bubble there, he got injured, you know, and when he came back, he was okay, but he wasn't really super. So you just wonder exactly what the best role is for him. I think he is a nice complementary piece on the Pacers right now. If you consider everything, assuming that Oladipo is out, I think he's a good fit for that team. But I also don't think he really elevates them sort of to a greater level than they really were at. So I'm really struggling to figure out exactly
just how good he is and what his value is, because you know, he at his best,
it's not $34 million.
No. But then would you know?
He had a good year.
He did have a good year, and you know, coming off the bench, he's a team guy. He can come off the bench and he provides a steady hand. He can, you know, at the end of games, I like to have him on the court. But would you, if you're the Pacers, if he says, okay, you know, I'll opt out of this contract if you give me 4 years for $100 million, would the Pacers do that? You know, at 30 years old, $25 million a year. I mean, that's kind of, I think, you know, I think that's the kind of contract he could expect.
Yeah. You know, if they have somebody who wants to be there, sign him up.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It's the Pacers.
Interesting. So we'll see. Yeah. Is there something to be done between the Celtics and Pacers here with either Turner or Oladipo, like you're saying? I think maybe, yeah, a lot of like crazy variations on this does maybe have to involve a third team for it to make sense a little bit more and make the numbers all work. But you tell us, let us know. What do you think about the Pacers trying to trade for Gordon Hayward? I wonder, does his barber come with him everywhere? Do we know that? Like, you got to include him? Is he on the books?
The demon barber of Fleet Street? I don't know if that guy made his way to Boston, but I'm sure he could get some haircuts around there. You know, everybody is happy to do the high and tight sides now.
Yeah, right. That's a good point. So we'll see with that. And it could be a very crazy offseason, like I said here, with the quick turnaround. So we'll see. I would expect him, though, to opt into that $34 million. I'm still going to go on record with that one. But crazier things have happened. Okay, we got lots more still to get to. But before we do, quick word from some of our new sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Awesome stuff. All right, let's get back to the up-down report. This one's great. Longtime Sonic star Sean Kemp. He is set to open up his own dispensary in Seattle this month, a move that will make history in the city. Kemp's shop, named Sean Kemp's Cannabis, will be Seattle's first Black-owned dispensary. Shop will be located downtown near the iconic Space Needle. So up or down, Lee, we'll go to you first here. Up or down on Sean Kemp opening a marijuana dispensary?
Of course I'm up, but yep. Everyone out there on Twitter is asking, why isn't it named Sean Hemp? Really?
Yes.
That's the biggest question here. But all jokes aside, this is very good news for Sean Kemp, a superstar player. During his days, he fell on some hard times afterwards, and now he's getting back on his feet and providing a business and a service that is very helpful and very useful. And he's not just sort of going in this like without doing his research first. He's partnering up with a couple of guys who are experienced in the industry,
yep.
And he's trying to make this as successful as possible. And he's also right now under the social distancing protocols, he's making it so that you can go curbside and pick up what you need. And I just think this is a great initiative, especially, again, you mentioned their first Black-owned dispensary, which is a very, very good thing, and he's, you know, somewhat of a pioneer in the industry. So we wish him all the best. He's a legend still in the Seattle area, and hopefully this works out for him. And again, this is a serious issue that really it's good to see somebody who's a known person within their city taking a lead on something like this. And obviously, we hope it all works out for him.
Yeah, well said, Trey. I assume your thumbs up, my man.
Yeah, I'm thumbs up, and a couple of people in the stream team are already hitting on what I was going to hit on. John Schumann, I know he was wearing a Big Pun shirt when he was on the show. He's dropping a Big Pun, no surprise. John Schumann says, there better be a weed variety called the Lister Blister. And I 100% agree. Lewis Henderson hits us with the Strain Man. That's really good, too. There's a lot of great built-in names for weed strains that Sean Kemp can bring to the table. Those two, obviously, supersonic sounds good, and honestly, I was going in there perusing the wares. I'm definitely going for a baggie that says Fat Sean on it. Pick that up and just chilling on the couch. Sign me up.
Him in a Cavs uniform on the bag or whatever. Yeah, I like that. Tass, thumbs up or thumbs down on Kemp here and his marijuana dispensary in Seattle?
Thumbs up. Gary Payton will be at the ribbon cutting. Yeah. I think it's this week. And I guess it's the first black-owned brick-and-mortar dispensary in Seattle, because Gary Payton launched his own cannabis company in 29 called Canna Sports. And I think that's just an online one. Yeah. And Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, still boys. And so I'm sure Sean Kemp took his time and learned a bit from Gary Payton's mistakes, if he had any. I don't know. I haven't really looked into Gary Payton's situation there, but I'm sure they're buds, and he's going to have a successful business along with his a couple of his business partners that that were outlined in the article there. So good luck to the Rain Man, to the Strain Man. Go do it.
That was another nice big pun right there. I'm sure they're buds. also, smart move by Kemp, too. I don't know if you guys saw the photo in the article. Unmistakable, this place. There's like a 30 by 80 foot mural that looks wicked of the Rain Man, like in all this, in Sonic Screen and stuff like that. It's done, I guess, by a local muralist, Jeff Jacobson. It looks incredible. You're going to go there just to take photos of that as it is. And then, hey, you're right there. Might as well pop in and get some, you know, some delicious treats for you a little bit later. So great call. Thumbs up. I don't know how you'd be thumbs down on this one, except you're right. I mean, it's sort of smart just going Sean Kemp's cannabis because, you know, you like the name recognition, right? But Sean Hemp is so good. The Strain Man, all this stuff is fantastic. It's like, and we love our pun. So that would go next level if he had gone that route. But congrats to him.
There's time. There's still time.
There's time.
You know, he'll get a team of them in. Call them the Super Chronics. like Fred Matt Katz brought that one up. Got to give him the credit. He is a pun master.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right.
How about a nice a quarter ounce of Nate McChillin?
Oh, man, we can make this its own podcast. Right, come on. Maybe we will.
Get Sean Kemp on to just pitch him strain names.
Sounds good. Yeah, I love that idea. All right, next one here. It's been nearly 2 months since the Nets hired Steve Nash as their new head coach. 2 months? Hold on. That can't be right. Has it really been 2 months since Nash got... That seems wrong. But anyway, I probably wrote that wrong. But he made his first hire for his staff, big name at least. Over the weekend, Shams reported that Amari Stoudemire, who was teammates, of course, with Nash and Nets general manager Sean Marks when they were with the Suns, he's joining the Nets team. He's going to be in a player development role, so sort of like an assistant coach here. Task get us started. Up or down on Amari back in our lives, joining Nash and joining the Nets coaching staff?
Oh, gimme an up. As he said, and Shams reported, a player development coach. He just finished playing in his career overseas in Israel, where he was the finals MVP there in Israel. And there's some signs he'll be good at working one-on-one with guys. Denny Avdija, who's a top five prospect for the draft and played with Maccabi this season and played with Amari, said he loves working with guys, trying to make them better, trying to get them involved. So it sure makes sense. Jared Allen being a better pick-and-roll partner for Kyrie Irving could be Amari's huge task, as he did with Steve Nash way back in the day. And this is... A lot of people are saying, well, Amari Stoudemire, no experience. Steve Nash, no experience. Well, it's one piece. Nash, I think, has to hire somebody with some coaching experience, some tactical experience beside him.
Jacques Vaughn is still there, right?
Jacques Vaughn, yeah. That's definitely true. There's rumors about him calling Dirk Nowitzki, calling Rajah Bell to join him on the staff. But yeah, Jacques Vaughn will be there. So I think he still needs a little bit more experience around him. But... Amari Stoudemire is going to love those philosophical conversations with Kyrie Irving, too. You know, those guys are going to bro down for sure. So kudos to Amari. His career was a bit of a roller coaster going from Phoenix to New York, where he started hot in 2010. And then because of the injuries to his knees, he just wasn't the same player. And he kind of fizzled out at the end of his career in his mid-30s in North America. But he picked things up overseas, and he had a really, really, really great career. And I think he knows the pressures of playing in New York, if that helps at all with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Maybe it will with some of the younger players. I don't know. Fact is, he's got some life experience. Player development coach, I think, fits the bill.
Okay, what do you think, Lee? It seems like the Nets are creating a vibe over there. Like Tass said, it tried to get Dirk, you know, you got Amari. It's like, don't worry about your coaching experience. We just want some cool guys to hang out. Maybe it works with guys like Kevin Durant and Kyrie. Maybe that's the way to go. Who knows?
Well, it's familiar people that Steve Nash knows, so I guess it's easier for him to communicate and get the message across of as what he wants Amari to work on with the players. So and good for Amari to sort of stay in the game, give back a little bit there. Yeah, apparently Dirk was asked, and he said he only really wants to coach if he's going to coach in Dallas. So
Steve, that guy is loyal, man.
Yeah, exactly. So Nash struck out there. But no, I'm excited to see how this comes together because there's a lot of pressure, but there's a lot of talent on the roster as well. So this could be a situation where the Nets do quickly, you know, vault up the Eastern Conference standings. It's possible with all that talent there. But, you know, it's also a little bit, you know, combustible too, you would think, with some of those personalities on the roster. So I think Steve Nash is trying to surround himself with people who he knows, he's familiar with. He doesn't have to get to know them in terms of his coaching staff. And that should make things a little more comfortable for him. So you got to try these things and hopefully it pays off.
Yeah, I'm thumbs up on this just for the fact alone that a name like Amari comes back into our lives. And then suddenly I'm watching Amari Stoudemire highlights and I'm like, oh yeah. Guy was amazing. You know, a six-time All-Star, but he played for a long time, and his highlights with Nash are next level. I mean, the Suns were one of the most enjoyable teams that I've ever watched play NBA basketball. I think that's true for a lot of people. But Trey, anything to add? I assume you're thumbs up on this?
Yeah, I'm thumbs up. I feel the same way I did when Steve Nash was hired. I didn't really know that he wanted to get into coaching, but I'm going to be happy to see him on the sidelines. It's going to be weird to see Amari Stoudemire wearing a suit every single night. That's going to definitely be a change. I always remember him as a guy in a cut-off jean jacket with the arms out showing off the guns. Maybe he cuts the sleeves off his suit as well. I don't know. Whatever it is, there's a lot of old Suns who are also available right now. Mike D'Antoni's out there. Alvin Gentry's out there. Get the gang back together. See what Sean Marion's up to. Let him teach some defense because you're not getting that from Nash and Amari. But it'll be fun to see him around.
Yeah, Tass, do you got an Amari Stoudemire Finals MVP report from your in-laws? Him playing in Israel there?
He was good.
He was good?
He was really good.
I still got it.
And, to add on to Trey's fashion profile, he likes to wear hats. To wear big-brimmed hats. So he'll be walking into the arena with some chapeaus for sure, and handing them out. I can see him flinging them out to all the boys in the locker room for sure.
I was gonna say maybe it's a slick move to try and recruit Carmelo to come play for the Nets. Bring in a hat guy. We know Melo likes his hats. They could talk hats. And you said the Amari and Kyrie. I'm sure like they might bond over, you know, just being interesting guys and having you know, some unique thoughts on life. I'd love to see those two guys in a bathtub of red wine, like chilling. Like, remember Kevin Hart had his little show online where he'd get in a cold tub and do an interview? Amari should do that with red wine baths. First guest, Kyrie Irving. But you got to be in the same one. You got to be in the same tub.
And go to Sean Kemp's dispensary just beforehand as
sure,
well. And,
sure.
Yeah, make it a real party.
Why not? Why not? Yeah, all right. Excellent.
There was a great caption of Amari sitting in that red wine saying to Kyrie, Kyrie, come into my office. And then jump in. Yeah, makes sense. Wouldn't it be the weirdest thing? Steve Nash being hired out of nowhere was very strange. But if Mike D'Antoni is an assistant for Steve Nash, wouldn't that be the absolute strangest thing?
That'd be weird. But also sort of I could see it happening.
Yeah.
Right?
He had an assistant job with the Sixers right before he was with Houston, so he's willing to take a second seat, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think just task meeting would be weird.
One of his players.
Having never coached, but yeah, who knows. All right, next one here. The Nuggets downtown sports venue getting a name change, guys. For the first time since it opened in 1999, the Pepsi Center is being renamed. It will be called, drum roll please, Ball Arena. Shout out to Turkaloo. Ball Arena. I've seen a lot of people mention that we've gone from the can, as they called the Pepsi Center, to the jar. Now being Ball Arena. Mason jar, I guess. Up or down on the Nuggets Pepsi Center being renamed Ball Arena, Lee?
Well, I'm up on it because it's not the greatest name in the world, even though it's a pun, of course, in the basketball world. But what it actually represents is this company is a leader, apparently, in renewable and recycling
aluminium and things like that. I know, I was trying to read up on it. I was trying to get the words right. But it's all aluminium. About the sustainability. So it's trying to make the experience a little bit more environmentally friendly for everybody. Right, so I'm thumbs up on all that. Okay, I'm thumbs up.
I'm thumbs up on what I have no idea about.
I know. Because it's not just this arena. It's basically the Arsenal Football Club in London, because the Cronkies own that as well. Yeah. And there's another team as well. I can't remember who that is.
The Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, the Rams. There you go.
SoFi Stadium. I copied this here. Let me read it for you, Lee. You can say aluminum for me, though, because I don't know how to pronounce it. The partnership includes sustainable and environmentally friendly elements that will be established at Ball Arena, SoFi Stadium for the Rams, Emirates Stadium in London for Arsenal. They vowed to transition to aluminum beverage packaging, cans, bottles, and cups for 100% of the venue's concessions, with the goal of implementing a closed-loop system by 2022. That's amazing.
Okay.
Those cups, bottles, and cans don't leave the stadium, go into the back, refreshed, and they're back on the line. Amazing. Amazing. And the recycle industry, whatever you want to call it, whatever that initiative is, that is phenomenal stuff. Phenomenal.
Yeah. I'll just say, I mean, the spelling of aluminium, you know, it's an IUM at the M. At the end.
No, it's not. Is it?
I've got it right here. I'm looking at it. It's aluminium.
No. I-N-U-M. I-N-U-M.
I think they're different things.
Aluminium.
Oh, maybe you guys are talking about two different things. I guess it's possible. We don't really know.
You got an extra I.
They're the same thing.
There's no extra I.
Aluminum and aluminium. But in American and Canadian English, you're talking aluminum. For everyone else, it's aluminium. Fancy pants Lee over here.
Sounds
no longer a man of the people. Going with international pronunciation.
Wow. Yeah. Ball Arena, Trey. Thumbs up or thumbs down? Forget this initiative. All right? What about the name, man?
Well, it sucks for the Colorado Avalanche to have to play in the Ball Arena. That's brutal for them. These guys are using pucks and they're supposed to go out there and play their best. Come on. But yeah it's a hilarious name. Along the same lines as the Hoop Stadium, the Game Garden, or maybe even the Sports Center. I'm up. Why not? Ball Arena? It's hilarious.
Yeah, I saw at... Honey Om tweet, the Nuggets should trade for Lonzo, sign LiAngelo, trade up to draft LaMelo, and then run a ball lineup in the Ball Arena. I mean, you need a fifth guy up
there.
They
gotta do it.
Guys, but they gotta do it. That's an excellent idea. I love the name Pepsi Center, but I wonder what happens to the Pepsi product. Is it gone, you think?
No, it's staying there, apparently.
Oh,
yes. Yeah.
Wow, okay, mm-hmm. I didn't know that part. Good to know. In the new aluminum, aluminium cans. Yeah.
That's what they should change it to, the aluminium center. Yeah. Aluminum center, aluminium. I don't know.
Okay. All right, so I've heard of aluminium cans, obviously. Aluminium bottles, they're everywhere now. Aluminium cups? Sounds a bit crazy, little too far.
I saw a photo of them. They look cool. I mean, I wonder how cold that would be on your hand carrying that back from the concession stand to your seat. You might have to wear gloves when you go watch a Nuggets game.
Oh, you better be buying a Nuggets koozie. They're going to have them in the gift shop for sure.
That's a really smart idea. Yes, you're right. Sucks for the Avalanche. It should be called the Ball and Puck Arena. That's what they should have called it. But Ball Arena. See you later, Pepsi Center. Let's take one more quick break before we get to a few more up-downs. What do you got, Trey?
Whoa! Mac is back! You ever wish you could have it both ways? I do. Like a zero-calorie cheeseburger or staying up late but not feeling exhausted in the morning. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But you can have it both ways with Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I've got some polos, some tees, some undies, and I love them. Simple, soft, stylish. In fact, I'm wearing Mack Weldon right now. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. If you told me my silver PK polo was made from 100% cotton, I would 100% believe you. But those antimicrobial silver threads keep me feeling fresher longer. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to macweldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code NODUNKS. That's MACKWELDON.com, promo code NODUNKS.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Excellent. All right, we got two more here. Over the last week, The Athletic introduced Seth Partnow's Player Tiers. I hope you guys saw this, breaking down the top 125 players in the NBA right now. So the four greatest players in the NBA right now, the 1A guys, according to Seth's metrics, are LeBron, Giannis, Harden, and Kawhi. Curry and Durant right there in the 1B category. They're 1B dudes. But what really set the internet on fire? Anthony Davis, not in the 1A or B or C group. He's a tier 2 guy. Anthony Davis, gasp. Guys, up or down on the Athletics. Seth Partnow slotting Anthony Davis in tier 2. What do you think, Tass?
Yeah, after what happened in the NBA Finals and Anthony Davis being a champion, I think just the recency of that led to the uproar of right. Seth's work. And so after 1B, it drops directly to 2A, where Anthony Davis is hanging with Luka and Nikola Jokic ahead of 2B guys and 2C guys. But let's step back from the finals. I think, Seth, it's fair work. It's fair work. Basically, I think his biggest argument with him not throwing him in with Giannis, LeBron, Kawhi, Harden, Durant, and Curry is that he had 7 years in New Orleans. He only took his team to the playoffs twice. And although this work is kind of about the future, and if you look at next year, what tier are these guys in? It's kind of a detriment to Anthony Davis because he plays with LeBron James, and so it's kind of impossible to know whether or not he could drag his team deep into the playoffs like those other six guys who are at the top. He hasn't been able to do that. He hasn't been really an offense unto himself like those other guys, and obviously the criticisms will go right at Giannis. Oh, come on. Right. He didn't do anything in the playoffs. Well, he is more of an offense than Anthony Davis is. That's just the way it's been. And Giannis, gets to the second round and gets bounced. People will criticize Harden. He has made a conference final on his own. He has gotten deeper. I think it is fair. He is splitting hairs, Seth is, and he says that in the piece. But it's a tough one to chop him down. I think the Luka Doncic one is even a bigger uproar, him not being in the tier one category. But you got to draw the line, and it's coming off him winning the finals. If this was coming off his first 7 years of his career, then no one would have a problem him being in tier two. But LeBron kind of boosts him into that stratosphere. But at the same time, if you throw any of those other tier one guys on a team with LeBron James, if Giannis, Kawhi, Harden, Durant, or Curry are on a team with LeBron James, they're running the finals too. So it's kind of, you can't work it both ways. I think Seth is being fair in this instance.
Okay. What do you think, Lee? Why don't you go? What do you think about this, even the tiers in general? Is it better than doing, top 10, top 15? I sort of like it. I think it's sort of cool trying to slot these guys in. But what do you think of 80 specifically, I guess?
There's no real way to agree across the board on these things, because it all comes down to opinions and biases that we have towards our favorite players. But I'm going to judge it on what we know right now. And there's no way I would have James Harden ahead of Anthony Davis. And I'm not trying to say that because of my history with James Harden, but Anthony Davis, I can't believe anyone would pick James Harden over him as far as if you were picking a team right now, because Davis is a two-way player
And he was sensational for the Lakers in the playoffs. And whether it's playing with LeBron or not, I mean, he's shown us for a while he has the talent, but now he had a platform where he really it really came out. So my opinion would be, Davis, just because you could have two players from the same team in the T1, I would still do it. Okay. I think Anthony Davis has proven that this season. And look, there was pressure on him coming into this season because, in the sense that, okay, now you're on a good team with good players, you have to deliver. And I think he did that. I think he did that very, very comfortably and very dominating for the most part in the playoffs. I mean, LeBron was fantastic in the finals, but Anthony Davis was not far away from just how good he was. And so for me, he's a tier one player.
Okay, Trey?
Seth says in his write-up that this is tier 1C or tier 2A, and they might as easily be known as tier 1.5. But to me, Anthony Davis is the definition of tier 1.5. Like Seth is saying, like Tass is mentioning, he's not a guy who's going to necessarily carry your team offensively from a standpoint of give him the ball. He's going to be able to go get a great shot and get that shot. But he's a perfect number two guy who accumulates points and efficiency like a number one player, right? Like just from getting rebounds, offensive rebounds, lobs, just little plays where he's scrapping along, he's able to get you to 25 points per game in the NBA Finals, shooting 57%. He's obviously a number one guy on defense, a defensive player of the year caliber wrecker on that side. He's, for me, the biggest mismatch in the league. I have him clearly ahead of Jokic from having just watched the playoffs and the entirety of their careers. I think the two-way value that Davis gives you is a little bit more important than what you're getting from Jokic as a number one guy on offense and a little bit of defense. But he had his own team for a long time, and the success wasn't massive. Once he got alongside LeBron James, you saw exactly what he could be and the perfect role for him. He's maybe a little bit miscast as the ultimate number one, give him the ball, go get a bucket guy, but he was even better with that during the NBA Finals. You know, he hit so many of those 18 to 20 foot jumpers, which if those are going to be dropping come the next season, then yeah, you're going to easily move Anthony Davis up into tier one. But he's kind of in the perfect middle spot where he's the best number two guy in the league just because he doesn't have to be the best number one guy because he's got the best number one guy. So, yeah, Seth's got him in the right spot. You can bump him up to tier one for me, or you could keep him right here at the top of tier two. That's why he's 1.5.
Yeah, again, highly recommend, if you haven't done so, to do a deep dive on the Athletic's Seth Partnow's player rankings here, the tiers. He did so much work on this. I think it's going to be really cool to see him hopefully continue to do this next season and see where guys like either bump up or fall out or stay in what particular tiers. It's pretty amazing stuff. This is obviously, you know, because he's like a numbers guy, it's metrics based. Like, you're going to learn a ton, so go check this out if you haven't already. It's on the Athletic, and let's hear from you guys whether or not you agree. Is AD a tier two, or should he be up in the tier one? Let us know on Twitter at NoDunkSync, or let us know on the stream team here. Final one, JD, I'm gonna go to you first, but I gotta read this whole thing because it's amazing. The supposed plot of LeBron James' long-awaited Space Jam 2: A New Legacy has hit Twitter. Sounds even more bonkers than the 96 original. No, a synopsis for the film was shared by a Hollywood writer and director, Ben Meckler. It reads, I'm going to read this whole thing because, again, it's incredible. During a trip to the Warner Brothers studio, NBA superstar LeBron James and his son accidentally get trapped within a world that contains all of the Warner Brothers stories and characters under the control of a malfunctioning, all-powerful force named AIG, played by Don Cheadle. With the help of Bugs Bunny, LeBron must navigate through a never-before-imagined world filled with iconic movie scenes and characters as they reassemble the Looney Tunes to rescue his lost son. Now to get back home, LeBron and the Tunes have to unravel AIG's mysterious plan and win an epic basketball game against digital gamified super versions of the NBA and WNBA's biggest stars as the entire world watches. So this is crazy. This leaked plot, if this is true, for Space Jam 2, could involve the entire Warner Brothers basically movie catalog. JD, up or down on, again, this leaked plot for Space Jam 2?
Well, I'm very torn because I hate Space Jam, as we discussed already on a previous episode of the show. But I love an Easter egg hunt, you know? Like, I love seeing references and stuff like that in movies. So I think ultimately I'm up.
Okay.
But I mean, here's what we know for sure. Well, just based on, there was some leaked footage from the rap party. So we saw, we're going to the Mask. We're going to see Jim Carrey as the Mask.
Okay.
We've seen Voldemort. So we got some Harry Potter in there.
Wow.
We have Jared Leto as the Joker. That's the Suicide Squad Joker, who it was revealed this week is coming back for this Justice League remake of or redo, the Snyder Cut of just, who cares?
Okay.
and I looked on IMDb, and we've got, in the cast, we've got two War Boys. So we're going to Mad Max. I'm excited about that.
Wow.
We've got Casablanca Fez Men. So we're going to go to Casablanca. We're going to see them go to Casablanca, I guess. And there's somebody in the cast named Trinity. Well, that's the Matrix. So it's not Carrie-Anne Moss, but, you know, maybe it's the back of her head or something. So, I mean, oh, and we saw the Pennywise from It. So it's like, okay, cool, I guess. I mean,
it's not feeling like much of a kid's movie anymore.
Exactly.
To me.
That's exactly right. You know, and it's not exactly an original idea because we've seen it in Ready Player One and Spielberg, you know, they do this whole Shining thing and it's fine, I guess. I mean, who really did it well was the Avengers Endgame when they went back to their own movies, and that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
The Lego movie also was, they did a pretty good job bringing in all the Warner Brothers characters. I mean, but yeah, I'm up on it, I guess. What would be really cool, this is what I want to see, and then this will be the best movie of the decade if they do this. If they bring in alcoholic Ben Affleck from the Warner Brothers movie The Way Back to coach the team. Now that's next level. That would be amazing.
Okay. If we see the drunk Ben Affleck coaching this team. All right. So, JD, you're up on it because like, you're at least intrigued by this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go see Space Jam A New Legacy. I mean, I'm not going to the theater to see that. When it comes on HBO Max, which I'm sure it will, I'll watch it, I guess. Just
we're gonna
just
have to
so I can
it,
go.
Course.
Oh yeah, we should review
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna review it. There will be a film session on Space Jam too. So
it's just like, oh, is that guy? There he is. Oh, that's that woman. I remember her. But is, you know, Sebastian and Oscar sitting watching, like, ooh, I can't believe they went to Casablanca. That's amazing. Ooh, Dr. Zhivago, did you see that, guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Well, they just watched Borat. Did they like Borat?
My kids?
Yeah.
Oh, they loved it. Loved it.
See, Warner Brothers?
No, that's like Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, so Lee, what do you think about this? Space
Jam
2 plot?
Look, from the time this was rumored to the time we're actually going to see it, it feels like this has been the longest build-up to a movie of all time. So I'm just hoping that it gets here soon and we can watch it and then trash it. Okay, so because everyone's going to trash it and just say, why do they even do this? You know, Space Jam sucked. This one's even worse. Let's just see it, man. Let's
not
just see
everybody
it.
Thinks Space Jam sucks.
I know. I didn't mind it myself. But that's the general sort of opinion is that people didn't like Space Jam. So, you know. But also, Kyle Kuzma is in this.
Yeah.
That's
Anthony Davis is in it.
Yeah, I know. Lillard's in it as well. I think maybe James Harden. There's some, you know, big, big names in there. And Kuz gets a run too. So.
And he's not even freakishly tall like Sean Bradley.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, if Boban, he had to be in it, really. And he's not. So, you know, I think they missed an opportunity there.
Right.
Is John Wick a Warner Brothers property? They could go back to him fighting Keanu.
I mean, the thing about Boban, he's such a great personality and he'd be such a great character in that movie. So, you know. I'm disappointed, but
it's kind of a bummer that it sounds like they're having actual players play the game, which is, I want to see Dirty Harry on the court, you know, like.
Right.
Bruce Lee, Enter the Dragon.
Wow.
Ooh.
Wow.
Okay. You know, he's not really dead.
Trey,
it's in a book. It's in a book. Yeah.
Trey, do you thumbs up or thumbs down on this plot?
I can't believe this isn't fake. I thought for sure it was fake based on this guy. What's his name? Ben? Yeah. He seems to be a bit of a Twitter jokester, and he is a comedy writer. This is a pretty funny synopsis that was written by someone, but JD's right. There is somehow leaked footage of all these super weird scenes. I didn't know that that was out there. I threw in a quick Space Jam 2 leaked footage into YouTube while you guys were talking. This thing looks weird, man. And is there a chance it's going to be rated R if they're going back to the Matrix? Right? Are we getting an adult Space Jam movie? What the people have finally been clamoring for? This movie is not made for kids. That would be awesome if LeBron said, yeah, everybody that saw this when you were 11 years old, you're going to love it at 35 years old. Let's see it. Let's see the R-rated version.
Wow. Tass, finish this off. You up or down on this, man?
Only if Leandro Barbosa is the Roadrunner or something of that nature. I don't know. This is very confusing.
It's confusing.
So let's bring it up. It's hard. It's really hard, as JD was saying, to throw in all these characters as a. I don't know how they're gonna do it, but I'll be watching.
But
I'll be
watching. I guess if you're to believe the synopsis, you're right, JD. They're just gonna be like popping into all these different worlds, right? Like, what I get. Like, because. Yeah, it doesn't sound like Voldemort's going to be playing center versus LeBron and the Loonies, which is like, that sort of sounds like it could be fun.
Yeah.
But why doesn't Voldemort just cast a spell in the locker room on the other team or something? You know, like there's some integration. I don't know.
We'll see. Guys, let's hear from you. Thumbs up or thumbs down on this leaked plot for Space Jam 2. Let us know. Let's call it there. Friendly reminder, keep sending your questions for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet them in, @NoDunksInc. Don't forget to grab your No Dunks merchandise at nodunks.com. Holidays are right around the corner, so don't wait. And we will be back, as I said off the top of the show, on Wednesday with a brand new squad episode, Halloween edition. We're talking candy, songs, movies, activities. You know there's an NBA angle to one of the categories as well. So join us on Wednesday. Are we going live with that, JD? What's the plan with that?
Might as well, I guess.
Yeah, all right. I didn't know if that was going to be a heavy workload for you, but
it's a lot of production
on that one.
Mm. Well, maybe we could scrap some of the production.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point. So, okay, sounds like we're going live. So join us at 10 a.m. Eastern on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Hit that little notification bell so you know when we're going live. Wednesday, 10 a.m., Squad Halloween Edition. I can't wait to argue about Halloween candy with you guys.
What's a Halloween movie, man? Oh, that's gonna be debatable, I think, on a few of them.
All right, that's a hell of a tease. What are you thinking? Let's just get it out of the way right now. What are you thinking? Well, okay, Mrs. Doubtfire, she's in costume. It's not a Halloween movie. All right.
No, but, okay, there's a dress-up scene in Philadelphia. I'm not sure if it's Halloween or just a dress-up party.
Clipper bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, Philadelphia is not a Halloween movie, and Bruce Lee is definitely dead. But he's not really dead. Did you know that? It's in a book.
It's in a book, yeah. Embrace the day, people.
You could stay, every day, and I'd be happy every minute. It's been so long, but you're the one I've waited for. It's happened already, it's gonna be groovy.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.